Is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Reduction in force notices going out across 7 federal agencies. Over 4,000 federal workers could lose their jobs, according to court documents. ABC's Mary Bruce.
The administration has argued they have to fire workers to afford to keep essential government services up and running. But layoffs have never been required in any previous shutdown.
The S&P 500, with its worst day since April, stocks tumbling today after President Trump threatened to increase tariffs on China up to 100%. This after China placed export fees on rare earths. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology is now the first of 9 universities to reject the adoption of a proposal by President Trump. It's a pledge that would ban the use of race, sex, and religion in hiring and admissions, as well as change policies and procedures in exchange for preferential access to federal funding and grants. Tennessee, the number of missing workers at the scene of a deadly explosion at a manufacturing plant that makes weapons-grade explosives has risen to 19. This is ABC News.
1490 WLCX, real news and great conversation for La Crosse.
And home to Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings from 9 to 11.
The Cubs and the crew at 2-2. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. It happened again. First inning, the Brewers' Freddy Peralta on the mound. Bottom of the first, two men on. The Cubs' Ian Happ at the plate on TBS.
With a drive, right field, way back there, gone! Ian Happ takes Freddy Peralta deep for the second time in the series, and the Cubs lead 3-0.
The Cubs went on to win last night 6-0 to force a Game 5 tomorrow night in Milwaukee. Manager Pat Murphy.
Going into a winner-take-all Game 5, how do you guys get that momentum back on your side?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that you can't force. Momentum in baseball happens based on what's on the field. Hopefully, the tables will turn when we get into Game 5 at our place.
NBA, the Bucks with another preseason win, 117-111 over the Pistons at Fiserv Forum. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Let's go!
You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight flu, pneumococcal pneumonia, RSV, and COVID-19. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and help strengthen your immune response. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. Schedule in minutes at VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Let's go! Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Well, New York Attorney General Letitia James was indicted on Thursday in Alexandria, Virginia. And Trump's dear leader's Justice Department doing what he said they were going to do, going after their political opponents. And Letitia James on Twitter put out a statement. I thought it was interesting to pay attention to. Here's Letitia James, New York Attorney General, and her statement.
This is nothing more than a continuation of the president's desperate weaponization of our justice system. He is forcing federal law enforcement agencies to do his bidding, all because I did my job as the New York State Attorney General. These charges are baseless, and the president's own public statements make clear that his only goal is political retribution at any cost. The president's actions are a grave violation of our constitutional order and have drawn sharp criticism from members of both parties. His decision to fire a United States attorney who refused to bring charges against me and replace them with someone who is blindly loyal not to the law, but to the president is antithetical to the bedrock principles of our country. This is the time for leaders on both sides of the aisle to speak out against this blatant perversion of our system of justice.
it is time for both sides to speak out. Honestly, this is an outrage moment. And understand, Trump promised to weaponize the Department of Justice during the campaign, did that. And now with the indictments of former FBI Director James Comey and now New York Attorney General Letitia James, he's delivered on that in broad daylight. And what's worse, the deafening silence from Republicans, it's not just them being complicit. It's them outright endorsing this. Let's not pretend this is some high-minded defense of law and order. This is about power. This is about revenge. This is about intimidation. This is about sending a loud and clear message that anyone who dare, anyone with the audacity, the unmitigated gall to cross Dear Leader, well, they're fair game. For prosecution, for intimidation, for any of it, no matter how shaky the case or flimsy the pretext, no matter. And what I find interesting is my Republican friends love to whine about what President Obama or President Biden did, and it was somehow trying to say it was the same thing. You know, they weaponized, they went after Donald Trump, they targeted him. Nonsense. They went after someone who broke the law. No one is above the law. No president pressed the attorney general to go after their critics. And former Justice Department officials, they haven't done that. What this is a form of naked political payback, pure and simple. And I know, no. This guy came out in public. On the campaign trail, I'm doing it. Reality is, many legal experts, people who have spent their lives, years, dissecting financial crimes and prosecutorial procedures, they've called both the charges against Comey and James weak. Some have said flat out laughable. Yet, none of that really matters. It doesn't matter to Trump or the current Republicans because law be damned. This isn't about justice. This is about the spectacle. This is about having the perp walk. This is about winning the news cycle. This is about payback. It's about silencing dissent. That's all this is really about. There's no justice here. And the indictment of Letitia James for a minor mortgage discrepancy years after she led what was a very successful effort to expose the Trump organization's business fraud, is that political payback? Now, here's the thing. This is the great part of our system. She's going to be able to go into court and defend herself. She's going to be able to, and we're all going to be able to see it. I look at Comey's indictment. On technicality, some weird technicalities, only because he came out publicly and criticized Trump's misconduct and refused to bend at the knee. Reality is, both cases, prosecutors appointed by Trump or somehow shuffled into office, you know, getting the loyalists installed, then went after the enemies list. The enemies list that Trump has been shouting at every rally and every social media post for a while now. It's not that no one is above the law in this environment. It's no one who challenges Trump escapes the law's abuse. I'm a law and order guy like anybody else. You break the law, you pay the, you know, the old Beretta line from when I was a kid. If you do the crime, you do the time. But this pure and simple is naked retribution. This is banana republic stuff. But again, this is who Donald Trump is. This is that kind of mob mentality, that kind of kneecapping your enemies to send a message. It's going to make an offer you can't refuse. And the thing that bothers me is, where are our Republicans? Nowhere that I can see, not a single profile in courage among them. They're sitting on their hands, nodding along, afraid to either anger the base, don't want to offend the base, or offend dear leader. So desperate to avoid Trump's wrath that they feign blindness to the collapse of the very institution that they all swore an oath to uphold, our Constitution, and an institution that they claimed, at least, to have revered at one point. Sad reality is by refusing to call out this thuggery and finding really clever new ways to blame the radical left or the fake news media, they've made themselves partners in the destruction of what have been American norms. Look, if James Comey and Letitia James are guilty of crimes and a jury of their peers finds them guilty, I'll give Trump credit for going after criminals. But from the sidelines, from where I'm at, it looks like what it is, pure political payback. And for those in this moment not speaking out at the obvious, well, you're not standing on the sidelines either. You're holding Trump's coat. Let's be clear. Silence in the face of abuse isn't neutrality, it's guilt. When Republicans say nothing, and look, it's going to get worse. The more that Trump gets away with it, the farther he goes, the more rope he's given, the farther down the entire party goes. And what Republicans are doing is they're putting their stamp of approval right on it as accomplices in weaponizing justice. For what? Well, for pure, raw political power. And sadly, we're showing future strongmen that all you need is the cowardice of a party. The cowardice dressed up as a party and as loyalty. And the law turns into an instrument of fear and vendetta instead of blind justice. Republicans, you can't spin this one away. You own it, every bit of it, every indictment, every chilling effect, every warning shot fired at anyone thinking about standing up to Trump. Even you. And this is the part that should be most scary for my Republican friends. Because Trump has shown us over the years that your loyalty doesn't matter. The people he called the very best people when they criticized him, when they took a stand and said, hey, this is too far, what did they become? Look at John Bolton. So in the world of weaponizing government, be very afraid. Because, yeah, they're going to go after those people first. And then everybody else. Because what we're watching American justice being turned into a warning shot. For Republicans, it's not enough to break democracy. They want us to cheer for their handiwork while they do it. And understand, they are as culpable as dear leader, as the one giving orders. And I hope. As working people like you and me who know the value of fairness and justice, that we know who to blame in this. And the blame belongs at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It belongs with one person. You know, yesterday I put out a social media post because people were ridiculing soldiers getting off of out of trucks and people mocking their appearance and all of the things that they were doing. And I'm like, hey, how about we not go after other working people? They're not the target in this. These people are pushed into this. We still don't have a court system that said, no, this is illegal. So they're being sent as part of their job, as their orders. And yes, I know the German soldiers didn't get to say they followed orders either, but these aren't comparable moments. And I know we're still holding on to the institutions of justice, still holding on to the reality, to the hope that there is a reality in which sanity takes hold. But in this moment, attacking them is not the way we go about this. Dividing us is not the way we go about this. Our ire, our anger, our frustration, our attention should be spent on going after Trump and his henchmen, not other working people. So the more of this stuff that he does, the farther he overreaches, the more organizing opportunities that we should take, that we should grab onto, that we should hold onto. And reaching out to those soldiers who don't want to be there, I think is the way to go. Not ridiculing them. Because I'll bet you some of those people voted for Kamala Harris. I'll bet you some of those people don't want to go and don't particularly like Donald Trump. I'll bet you. And I'll bet you the people who were their commanders, feeling especially after that Quantico thing. I'm thinking that there's a path here. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Angry responses to the top, as always. Just my thoughts. Want to hear yours. rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Will Rice is going to be here to share some thoughts. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. So some really great news. Great news. In fact, mark it on your calendars. It's big, big stuff here. Corporate America saved $77 billion over last year, thanks to Donald Trump and the Republicans giving a wonderful income tax cut to our billionaire friends over in corporate America. But $77 bucks in their pocket. Now, granted, we're going to have to pay for it by taking food out of the mouths of children and heating assistance away from seniors so that they freeze over the winter. But hey, maybe it trickles down to the rest of us. Maybe anyone buying it? Yeah, me neither. But here we are in the midst of a government shutdown, and, well, corporate America's happy, working for them. But here to share some thoughts on the shutdown and what this means to all the rest of us, I've asked my good friend Will Rice to come share some thoughts. Will is a policy consultant with the folks over at Americans for Tax Fairness, AmericansForTaxFairness.org, the website. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you once again for having me on.
So, $77 billion corporate America got to put in their pocket thanks to you and me and the rest of us who are tightening the belt a little bit.
Yeah, and it's even earlier than it was supposed to happen. I mean, this is all because of the tax and spending bill that they passed back in July. And most of what was the benefits for corporations were supposed to only start kicking in next year. But what I think what happened was, what I saw in the CBO report was, they know that they owe a lot less in tax now because of that law, and so they're paying less in estimated taxes. So the drain on the Treasury is already starting. $77 billion, 15% less than last year. Yes, and that's every dollar that doesn't come in from profitable corporations is one less dollar for schools, roads, healthcare, childcare, et cetera.
And look, and it's going to get better next year because I guess the Biden era alternative minimum tax is going to go away as well. So this could be even more lucrative.
Absolutely. And when corporations get tax cuts, that means rich people get tax cuts because rich people own corporations. It's very misleading when conservatives say that, well, blankety blank percentage of Americans have some sort of investment in the stock market. The fact is the top 10%, the highest income 10%, own over 90% of the stock. The top 1% own half. So yeah, you may have a few shares in a retirement account somewhere, but the real ownership of corporate America is among the very rich. And so when you give tax cuts to corporations, you're giving tax cuts to the rich people.
No, and we seem to do that really well. And now that the government is shut down, we are being ruled by the wealthy, by corporate America, because there are no cops on the beat. There's no one to make sure that the air we breathe is safe or the water or anything. It's now the because the government shut down, there are no cops. Just like on the highway, you know, there's no cops. You're going to put your foot to the floor. Here we are. Any thoughts on what's going on?
Absolutely. This is a Republican shutdown. This is a Trump shutdown. They claim that they do not want to take health care away from the American people, but they won't include that in a spending bill to get the government open again. So Democrats very reasonably are saying, well, if you claim that you don't want to have this happen to the American people, have their health insurance premiums spike, let's just put it in writing. Because anyone's ever watched Donald Trump over the last 10 years or the last 40 years knows you don't really trust a handshake agreement with this guy. So if we really want to maintain these premium subsidies for healthcare, let's make that part of the deal.
Yeah.
And while we're at it, let's reverse these cuts to Medicaid that are going to cost 10 million lower income households their healthcare. So the Democrats are saying we have two crises. We have a budget crisis and we have a healthcare crisis. Let's address both of them, and then we can get the government open again.
But to your point here, because this is what I've been talking about all week, I think we have a trust crisis, because I've been asking the question, which is more worthless, Donald Trump's word, his handshake, or his signature? Because I can't figure out which, because I know he screwed people over with all of them. So if you're the Democrats, how can you trust anything, even if it's in writing?
It's tough, because he's doing these things called rescissions, rescissions is when Congress votes to take back spending they've already approved. But Trump is trying to push something called a pocket revision rescission, which sounds complicated, but all it basically means is he's trying to grab more power over our spending from Congress. And if you look at the Constitution, Congress is supposed to be the one in charge of the national pocketbook. Congress is in charge of spending and taxing. And Trump, as part of his authoritarian bent, is trying to grab a lot of that power away. And he has an ideological director of the Office of Management and Budget named Russ Voigt. And they think they can get away with spending or not spending money based on what they want to do that day rather than what Congress has told them to do in legislation.
But the question becomes, you know, if Congress isn't pushing back, if the Republicans aren't doing anything to push back, isn't this what Congress wants then?
Well, apparently, but I don't think what the American people want. They may not know the details of how congressional appropriations work, but I think they know that we're not supposed to be a government of kings. We're not supposed to be a government of a single guy in charge. There's supposed to be something called a Congress that involves representation of people all across the country. There's supposed to be compromise. There's supposed to be legislating going on, not just government by fiat, which is what Trump seems to want.
Well, I have Republican friends who said the Republicans are compromising. We're only going to kill the poorest of people in this country by taking their health care away. You're going to be fine, Will.
Yeah, actually, I am going to be fine, at least for a while. I mean, you know, it's a dangerous game to say I'm going to be okay in the face of some injustice going on, because you never know when it's going to be your turn. So I don't take any comfort from that fact. I mean, I buy my insurance on the Obamacare market exchange. And the only thing that makes that affordable, the affordability and the Affordable Care Act are these subsidies that are about to go away at the end of this year, or at least these enhanced subsidies that are going to go away. So it doesn't fill me with any confidence when someone says, oh, it's just going to be these poor people, because who knows when you're going to be next.
Yeah, you know, first they came from, and who was left when they come for you. And this is kind of why I think this fight is so important, and why I've been supportive of the Democrats, because I think in this moment they are on the right side of history, and I think they're fighting for what the American people really want, and is that health security. This I think is an important issue, and I think it's one that I think Republicans and Trump have misread how important this is.
The polling shows that first of all, like 78% of the of the public thinks that the Democrats are on the right side of this. Even majorities of MAGA voters say that these subsidies should be retained. So there's really no constituency for taking healthcare away from millions of people or making their premiums spike. And I was just watching today Marjorie Taylor Greene on CNN sounding like Bernie Sanders or somebody, you know, I mean, because she's apparently figured it out. She says she's hearing from her constituents. And it's just a strong ideological core in the Republican Party that says, I don't like government. I don't like anything government does. I'm happy to shut down the government. I'm happy to take away people's health care. I don't care. And I don't think that's where most people are at.
No, and I think the healthcare issue is important. And I also think the fact that they have tried to figure out how they're going to fund food assistance because they realize when people get hungry, they get angry. And I've been saying this for a while. Things are only going to change. You know, the old labor frame of when your stomach gets empty, your head gets right. I think things only change when people feel real suffering and hunger, and it affects them and people they know personally. Does any of this change? And I think they may have touched on some things that are touching their base, because you're right. I've had a couple of Red Hat folks going, well, I don't think this is such a good idea, even though Dear Leader is the one who's pushing it along.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's often been commented on that the people who are going to suffer the worst from all of these cuts to healthcare, to food assistance, live in red areas of this country. And so at a certain point, whatever your emotional enthusiasm is for Donald Trump is going to run up against, like you say, an empty belly or a doctor's bill or something. And I think at that point, you snap back to reality a little bit and realize that this is not a good program for me.
Yeah, this becomes one of those moments where, you know, I look at the news again, you know, the fact that corporate America saved $77 billion. While we're talking about taking healthcare subsidies from people who desperately need it, talking about taking food off the tables of families, when we could be solving real problems. You know, we had cut childhood poverty in more than half at one point during the pandemic. And then, of course, we made, you know, childhood poverty great again by doing away with those tax credits. We could be moving policies like that.
Absolutely. There's so many things we could be doing. There's so many problems we'd be solving, so many issues we could be addressing. It's really sad. It's tragic, really, that we're battling over these relatively small issues where the American public has made it clear what they believe. They believe that people should have access to health care. They should have access to food. These are really not controversial issues. And we could come together and create, construct better programs that serve more people, probably save money because they're better constructed. And when people are not desperate for the essentials, that's when they're able actually to think and dream and plan. And that's when you have small businesses start and people getting to work all the time and their kids getting to school. So it doesn't really help society for people to be on the verge of disaster all the time.
But the thing is if you can keep people on the verge of disaster, if you can keep them desperate, you can keep them exploitable. And look, this is where we sadly are, where most working people in this country are exploitable. And look, the anger is real. And I don't, you know, when my Red Hat friends, you know, tell me how angry are, I go, look, I'm with you. I'm angry too, because the working class of this country continues to get the short end of the stick. So the anger is real. I just think a lot of it is misplaced, especially in this debate. The anger clearly should be at Trump and the Republicans for forcing this lockout and forcing this hand, because Democrats, sadly, over the years have given too much. But in this, I think, again, I go back to, I think they're right.
I think they are too. And I think it's important that they stand up to the Republicans on this issue, not only just on the issue of health care, as important as that is, but just in general, whether we're going to maintain ourselves as a democratic republic or we're going to become an autocracy where the president makes all the rules. So I think that's where the American people are, and I think that the Democrats are going to continue to gain strength as they continue to hold the line.
Yeah. Last question I've got for you: How long do you think this goes? You know, is this going to be prolonged? Do you think there's a way out of this that is less painful?
I think it's going to go on for a while, and I don't tend to be optimistic about these things, but I think that the Republicans are going to be the ones who finally blink and make some sort of deal for health care. And I think that'll be a big win for the American people.
That is the hope. Will Rice, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you. Keep up the great work there at Americans for Tax Fairness. Want to hear your thoughts. Is Will right? Do you think that the American people are ready for health care? You think they're ready to push back and tell Republicans, hey, get back to the negotiating table. Get back to work. Want to hear your thoughts. Rick at the ricksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 1490 WLCX.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the low 40s. Sunshine and beautiful for your Saturday, highs in the upper 60s. Clouds move in Sunday, chance of showers and the wind picks up. Warmer highs in the low 70s. It's 55 right now.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I know my neighbors here in Pennsylvania about to see their electricity prices go up. And look, the state on one hand, you know, doing this stuff, but on the federal level, you know, all of this assault on solar, on wind, on alternative energies, all of these kind of political payback games that we're seeing coming out of D.C. and the Trump administration, not going to help your electric bill. But here on the state level where I live, they're saying going to jump, you know, $25-$30 a month, which for most working families, that's going to be a chunk of money that could be putting food on the table, keeping a roof over their heads, you know, maybe a night out. Who knows? But here to share some thoughts on, well, why, how, what, where, all of that stuff, I've asked Monica Carey to come talk with us. Monica is the Pennsylvania State Director of Solar United Neighbors. You can check out their website at solarunitedneighbors.org. Monica, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
So rates are going up. Your press release said 16%. Why? Why is this happening?
Yeah, so, I mean, this really, if you think about it, we haven't had rates go down in a very long time. They've been rising for the past few years. So gone are the days of rates being lowered. But in this past July, we actually saw an even more kind of ridiculous price hike than before. And that's because PJM, who is our grid operator, they act as a kind of marketplace. And so the more demand there is for electricity, the more they get to pump up the rates, which means that we all as ratepayers get to suffer because the single largest demand for electricity is coming online, and that is data centers. And that's not going to change anytime soon. I think we're going to be suffering from that for the next many years.
But I thought they were opening Three Mile Island. We're bringing nuclear back. That was going to take care of all of this. We weren't going to suffer in this. At least that's what I was told. Is this not accurate?
Not accurate. I mean, just Three Mile Island is not going to supply enough electricity for all of these data centers that are being proposed. I'm here in Lancaster County. We have one. There's one across the river in York County. I know they're all over Pennsylvania. And there's interest in creating even more of them. We saw, you know, a 10%-ish 16% average rate hike this past year. We're set for next year seeing probably about the same, maybe only slightly less. So I really don't think that this is going to end anytime soon. We just do not have enough supply on the grid right now.
Right. Now, you know, this is just Pennsylvania. This is across the country because data centers seem to be the new, the new thing everybody, the new toy every kid wants. And this is going to be something that will be replicated, especially when you look at the fact that our grid, and we haven't heard the stories of brownouts too much lately, but our grid's still aging, hasn't gotten any younger. We haven't done an awful lot more investing, but we are going to be putting much more strain on it. So, yeah, rates are probably going to go up, but I think services are going to take a major hit as well.
I think that's right. I think we're just going to see, and you're right, that we're seeing this across the country. It's not just in Pennsylvania. The new buzzword is data centers. And I can't really, you know, separate myself from that. A lot of it is AI, but a lot of it is what we're doing right now, you know, this video call online. I am a remote worker, so I rely on data centers for my day-to-day work. But because we are living in this increasingly digital world, we really do need to put more electricity into the grid to help lower costs for everybody else. That's why, you know, my organization, we believe that the solution is solar. It is the fastest, cheapest way to put energy on the grid and to do it quickly. And it's also a very low cost form of energy. So it can really save people money.
But Monica, the sun doesn't shine 24 hours a day, we're told. They're cloudy. You've heard of cloudy days. So I don't want to have to, you know, my internet, if it's cloudy, I don't want to lose my internet, Monica.
Okay. Yes, this is a very good point. The sun does, in fact, go down at night. There are clouds. It snows. But, you know, we actually are very good at predicting when the sun is going to be out. We know it's out during the day. We know we're going to see less of it in the winter. We're very good at predicting the weather. And so it's actually really easy to predict what solar is going to look like. Whereas if you think about a traditional kind of fossil fuel plant, they frequently have to have kind of surprise, shutdowns for maintenance. And that is, you know, extremely unreliable. So I think that in some ways, you could argue that solar is much more predictable and reliable than fossil fuels.
Yeah, and the frustrating part for me, and I was just joking because, you know, that's one of the dumb arguments I hear because, hey, we've got batteries. We could probably store some of that sun for nighttime. We could plan this. There are ways to do this to where we don't have to keep, you know, drilling out of the ground, just like wind, just like tidal, just like geothermal. I'm an all of the above kind of guy. If we can do all of this stuff, it might help make our lives a little better and, more importantly, a little cheaper.
That's exactly right. So I don't think anybody is going to argue for only solar. And, you know, the reason that I answered the way I did is because I don't think it's useful to say, oh, well, solar pairs with batteries really well. That makes it sound like solar is not good enough on its own. Solar is, as I said, incredibly predictable, but solar plus storage is amazing. You know, that is a day and night kind of solution. But anybody who's really thinking about the grid kind of holistically, which kind of a silly word to apply here, but you know, if you're thinking about how to power the grid, it can't just be one energy source. What happens when we run out of that? What happens when all of those power plants, you know, shut down for maintenance on the same day or whatever that is? The key to reliability, to resiliency, is having a broad portfolio of many different energy solutions. Add your wind, your solar, but also, you know, if you have your fossil fuels, keep the gas so that you can run at night. I think what we're really looking for is kind of a comprehensive plan.
Right. No, look, you know, we put solar panels on my house back in 2012. The state had the Sunshine Fund gave us a couple of bucks. The Obama administration had a plan, a little tax credit, made it a little bit more affordable. Still was pretty expensive back then. But over these years, it's paid for itself because we produce about 40% of our own electricity. So our bill is considerably less. And I remember at the time my children going, hey, Dad, how come, you know, Walmart or Target or any of these big places, how come there aren't solar panels on those roofs? Because after all, we do use the mass of our electricity during the day when the sun is out might help with the grid that struggles during the day. Just seems like at the time my children were young, something that even they got, that maybe our policymakers in Harrisburg and in Washington, D.C. and capitals across the country, maybe the light bulb could come on for them.
Your children are very wise and many years ahead of their time. But yeah, I think so, you know, maybe kind of backing up a little bit, we know that there isn't more solar on warehouses and big box stores like Walmart and, you know, and IKEA. And that's because in Pennsylvania, we didn't do enough to incentivize building solar on those locations. So this comes from something called our portfolio standards. And in Pennsylvania, there was only a requirement to get to half of 1% of all electricity sold from solar. That is an extremely low requirement. It was set back in 2006. It technically plateaued in 2021, and we never re-upped it. It never increased. You know, I think right now we're around 1% is solar, but there's no incentive to add to it. So I think folks are going to continue to just kind of do what they're used to instead of trying to go solar.
And right there's the reason that solar, honestly, and I'm sure you're gonna push back at this, my statement. Solar is basically dead in Pennsylvania, in my view, for residential consumers like me and others. Because, you know, most of the contractors I knew that were putting solar panels on people's homes, like when I did it, they've left the state for other places that they have a much better energy portfolio mix, and that the SREC credits, the payback is significantly higher. We've basically lost the ability of people to put them on and to maintain them here because they've all gone to places that are more lucrative.
Yeah, so the SREC is like that payment that you get as a solar owner. It's a little additional income, and it comes from that portfolio requirement. So because the requirement is so low, solar owners are only getting you know $8 per SREC. In Washington, D.C., it's more like $400 per SREC. So right there, that's a huge incentive to go solar.
But it's part of the reason that I did it, because when we put the panels on, and this is to your point about the energy portfolio mix, when we put the panels on, it was $250 a credit when I did it. Within a year, because so many people went to it and they didn't update the portfolio as they should have, that 250 number just plummeted and stayed down. And those contractors who were doing good work, creating good jobs, you know, doing a good thing to help our energy needs, it all dried up, and they went to places that did update their portfolio: New Jersey, Washington, D.C., other places. That's the sad reality. So for me, this is something that Governor Shapiro could be leading on. This is something that Republicans could be, but aren't. This is something that really, I think, is nonpartisan and something that could, should, and must be done.
Well, and the portfolio standards updates have been introduced since, I want to say, 2020, and just no action has been taken. Governor Shapiro did campaign on this promise called 35 by 35. And the idea is that it would be 35% reliable energy sources powering the grid by 2035. There is currently a bill in the legislature for passing that. It's called PRESS. And it's just not going anywhere. So I think there is, you know, an opportunity for Governor Shapiro to push harder on the legislature to try to get them to pass that. Obviously, there's a lot of opposition, but I think we're seeing that kind of at every level. And we really need these legislators to just, you know, cut this red tape, let us choose the energy source that we want as Pennsylvanians, and really help kind of bring some of those costs down for everybody.
No, this is an opportunity. And this is, again, I go back to, because I'm remembering all the conversations I had back in 11, 12, 13, as the idea that solar was going to be something we were going to do. You could put it into building codes that most new homes would be built with them. So that you could get off of the grid, because, again, I don't see that we have the political will to really do the kind of upgrades on our grid that we desperately need and have been needing, I don't know, since the 80s. And if we're not going to do that, we've got to do something, because at some point, as you've pointed out, a lot of people do, you know, remote calls. They work remotely. Our energy needs are certainly not going down. At some point, it all will silence. So maybe being a little proactive, maybe thinking a little bit further down the road, maybe something our political leaders, we as voters, should be thinking about.
I think that's exactly right. I do think there is something to Pennsylvania has this kind of heritage around fossil fuel production. And I totally understand that. But I think what's more important is that we are an energy producer. And as you said, it's an all of the above kind of energy solution that we need. We need lots of different energy sources. We know for a fact solar is the fastest, easiest to get onto the grid. You can put it right where it's used. So you actually save money on things like transmission costs. So really, it should be built. It should be helping to drive down costs for everybody. It also helps create jobs. We want jobs in Pennsylvania. You know, they're really just broad benefits.
No, I remember when Jerry Brown was running for president back in 92. One of his main campaign issues was rewiring the country, because according to him, if I remember right, back then, you know, you're talking 91, 92, he was saying something like 70% of all the electricity we create is lost in those transmission lines. So just having right there with a very short transmission seems to be sane, rational, logical, all of that stuff. But I guess we're not going to do it because it is all of that. And help me here. It seems to me that there are moneyed interests, entrenched moneyed interests, that don't want and all of the above strategy. They don't want renewable energy to come in. They don't want clean energy because they're pocketing off the dirty stuff.
Yeah, I think that that is the unfortunate history of the United States. There's honestly not just the United States. It is deeply entrenched in our politics that fossil fuel interests are going to be represented. I think that's why we're seeing, you know, there is a lot of rescission of these renewable energy kind of tax credits. We just completely got rid of the solar tax credit. We're seeing a cancellation of billions of dollars that were going to go towards renewable energy. And, you know, you can argue that's not supposed to be going towards just one type of energy, but the end result is it's going to make it so that we have many more energy sources on all of our grids. We're, you know, reducing water pollution, reducing air pollution. The air quality around here is terrible. So I think we can agree that that's needed. Yeah. And you're making the grid more reliable, more resilient.
But what do you say to the person, Monica, who goes, you know, if the consumer really wanted it, if Rick Smith wants to have it, he can go get it. What do you say to that argument that the market just doesn't want solar?
Well, I think we actually have a lot of evidence that says that that's not true, because the costs of solar have gone down astronomically, even just in the last like 10 years. We're seeing more and more people actually are able to afford and choosing to go solar. And the reason, to bring this all back, that they're doing that is because electricity costs keep rising, and it is impossible to afford your day-to-day life. And so people are choosing to go solar because they know that the system is going to pay itself off in, you know, 8-ish years. And everything after that, from year 8 to year 25 and beyond, is free energy.
Yep. I know, I'm a living testament to that. The website, solarunitedneighbors.org. Check that out. Check out the work Monica Carey and her group does. Monica, great talking with you. I appreciate the time, and I hope to talk to you again real soon.
Thank you so much, Rick. Really appreciate it.
Excellent stuff. Again, Monica Carey, Pennsylvania State Director of Solar United Neighbors. Check out that website, solarunitedneighbors.org. I want to hear your thoughts. All in favor of all of the above energy strategy with solar and wind and tidal and geothermal and all that stuff? I want to hear it. Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1913. At 2:02 in the afternoon, President Woodrow Wilson at the White House touched off an explosion at the Gamboa Dike in Panama. With that touch of a button, the last barrier to joining the waters of the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans through the Panama Canal went up in smoke. The Chicago Tribune described the scene in Panama, writing, quote, "Then suddenly came the muffled roar of the discharge of 1,600 pounds of dynamite, which sent a shower of water, mud, and rock high into the air. Spreading out as it went upward, the hole heavily veiled into a cloud of smoke. As water began to pour through the rent made by the explosion, the crowd sent up a great cheer. It was a noteworthy moment in the construction of the canal. But that moment came at a staggering cost of workers' lives. For more than 20 years, the French and then the United States worked on the canal project. The U.S. phase lasted for a decade. As many as 45,000 workers toiled on the canal during the peak years of construction. These workers came from the United States, Europe, Asia, and Panama. West Indians formed the core of the work crews. These workers faced stifling heat, brutal working conditions, and poor accommodations. Workers had to contend with ravaging disease, poisonous snakes, and torrential rains. Workers also faced racial discrimination. For example, West Indian workers earned half the hourly wages of U.S. and European workers. They also lived in much more crowded barracks. Worker deaths were so frequent that death or funerary trains made continual runs to bring the bodies away from the construction site. It is estimated that more than 27,000 men died building the canal.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Gotta tell you, I like Monica. Good guest. And right topic. You know, this is one of those things that I, for a while here on the program, was very passionate about. And it kind of fell off because, well, politically, we seem to have lost the way. And we still have. In a lot of states, especially my state of Pennsylvania, we have kind of lost the way on renewable, on solar, on all of the things that, you know, for a while were possible. And this is my problem with what's happening with this administration. They are, because they view it as something politically, as their enemy, as politically something that they are dead set against, not because it's not right or good or helpful, just because the other side wants it. It's something that's been back in the news and really, I think, worth defending. And, you know, as I was talking with Monica, you know, I started remembering back to 2011, 12, when I was really hot on the, hey, you know, we have an opportunity to really remake the future of how we do things in this country and how we power our homes and how we ensure that the grid that was failing and still is, we get a little bit extra out of. We take some of the pressure off of. And what you end up getting is the way that you kill things like this is you make it about a this or that. We've got binary choices. Either we're for the gas car or we're against. Either you're for the status quo or you're against. And which is where you keep coming back to this, you know, all of the above. We should be doing as much as we can to ensure that one, we get the energy we need. Two, it's affordable. But three, in a transition, we go to the best option. And by figuring that out, allowing the market to decide, giving people real options. Because right now the option is, well, there's gas stations everywhere and you can only plug in certain places. So electric cars must be bad. Now, I've got friends on the other side who said, it's all gas stuff is bad. We need all electric cars. And I'm like, I'm not 100% on either camp. But the idea of giving people choice and moving in a sane, rational direction and having government help balance the playing field seems reasonable to me. And solar was one of those places that just made complete sense from when I was a child. Look, when Carter put solar panels on the White House to heat the hot water for all the laundry and all the hot water needs, seemed like a sane, rational thing to do. Then you got Reagan who came in, ripped those solar panels off,
and bought a gas or a oil burning furnace in to do that work. Again, the messaging, pretty clear. And then the policies that came with it. And this is what's been frustrating to me because, well, those solar panels that back then were very rudimentary were the start of something. And we created that in this country. Those were industries that were birthed here at home. And we could have dominated the world with that technology. And because of ideological and economic imperatives, well, we chose not to. And we were saddled with what I think is the worst option. So when we decided in, you know, during the Rendell years here in Pennsylvania, but in the Obama years nationally, that, hey, we're going to invest in solar panels and we're going to make them more affordable for homeowners like me to put them on our houses, seemed rational. So we did. You know, we got a little bit of money from the state, a little bit of money from the feds, kicked in a bunch of money of our own, and we've got solar panels, and they're going to be there, you know, probably for another, till I die, probably. And it's created about 40% of our electricity needs. It's paid for itself, basically, over the years. The problem came when we had to replace the roof. And because Pennsylvania had basically given up on solar and killed the solar renewable energy credits, the SRECs. And, you know, when I started there, like I said, like $250 a credit, they were down to $8 at the time. The people who did this work were gone. They went to places where it was more lucrative because it's where the work is. So the people who installed the panels no longer operated in Pennsylvania. They went to New Jersey. And it wasn't in their interest to come back to the center of Pennsylvania to do one little job. So I had to get an electrician to come, and he did a terrible job of it because he didn't know what he was doing. And it made it a little more difficult. Eventually got around it because, you know, where there's a will, there's a way, and we've got it. It's working, but it's... If there were an industry that was thriving, you would have all of this. And because of one political party's ideological opposition, you've killed an industry that created good family-sustaining jobs, that could have created an industry for future generations, especially in the solar world. The sun isn't going anywhere. And if it does, well, there's none of us left. So for me to... When I hear that there's an opportunity for solar to be used, I'm all in favor of it because, duh, it's there. We just don't have the political will. And what we've got is we've got entrenched interests that keep us pitted against each other. And I haven't said that everyone has to have it. I think it should be part of the state's portfolio, so that the people who want it, who are like me, who are willing to put it on the roof, can do so in a cost-effective way. So that the guy, the neighbor next to me who doesn't want it, actually benefits because I'm not pulling from the grid. And some days we're actually putting back into the grid, especially on those high consumption days, makes it better for everyone. And again, in a country that preaches radical self-interest, I know talking about the common good, talking about what benefits all of us is kind of not in our norm. But maybe we should be talking about things as a matter of policy that benefit all of us in a way. And maybe not directly all of us, but indirectly. Solar being one of those things. And like my kids, who were very small at the time when we put panels in our house, you know, hey, Dad, why aren't they all over the mall, all over the Walmart roof, over the Target roof, over the Costco roof? How come they aren't covering all of this stuff with all of that open space? Why do we not have solar panels everywhere? And how do you answer a child with, because we've got idiot leaders? Because they don't understand that. They understand, how do we get things done? How do we make the future of this country worth them inheriting? Seems interesting to me. Curious your thoughts. Pro-solar, anti-solar, make your best argument. Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you download the podcast. Or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. Israel has halted its bombing of Gaza, and the release of the Hamas-held hostages is expected in days. ABC's Ian Pannell is in Tel Aviv.
The 72-hour countdown underway for the release of all hostages as tens of thousands of Palestinians surge back to what's left of their shattered homes. The hostages expected to be released anytime now through Monday. At least 20 of the 48 still believed to be alive in exchange for thousands of Palestinian prisoners.
Meanwhile, officials tell us that U.S. troops will oversee the Gaza ceasefire and have begun to arrive already in Israel. The Dow fell nearly 900 points today after President Trump called for a 100% tariff on Chinese imports. As the government shutdown continues, some 4,000 workers in seven different government agencies will see reductions in force. That, according to documents in a union lawsuit. Trump administration pushing in court again to deport Kilmar Abrego Garcia, this time to Southern African country. This is ABC News. Love will persist.